they'll say the wisdom of the body is so informative. Right now, I notice a little sweat broken out, and I notice my heart racing. And I feel tightness in my chest, a little narrowing in the eyes. And I know that that's fear. And I know that's fear because I've practiced mindfulness of the body. I've been able to learn about my own body by paying attention. So it's really been a gift to me, and therefore it's quite a pleasure to be able to share a little bit about mindfulness of the body. First, I wanted to thank Tim for yesterday's talk and kind of setting the stage for the Satipatthana Sutta. It's really, to me, a really important text. And part of the reason is the Buddha, who we can all agree was a historical figure about 2,600 years ago. And he called the Satipatthana the direct path to realization. And he didn't say that about any of his other teachings. So that's pretty important, is that the direct path to realization. And what's realization? Awakening, waking up to the truth of how things are. Realizing freedom, finding ease. The direct path. And so one of the things about the Buddha that is so amazing, he's often called an eminent physician because he saw that there was a problem, an illness, and he saw that life was difficult. He looked and saw that there was sickness, that there was old age, that there was death. And remarkably enough, he said to himself, "I'm not accepting this." That's a pretty bold thing. I'm not going to accept sickness, old age, and death. And he endeavored to go beyond and to find something else. Really remarkable. And it's often said that what his teachings were that he taught suffering and the end of suffering. That word's a little loaded, and often we hear in, you know, what's Buddhism about? Well, life is suffering. It's a little bit more complicated than that. It's a little bit more accessible than that, in fact. And the word suffering, we translate dukkha, is the root word that we translate into suffering. And that word also means unreliable or unsatisfactory. So, you know, you might look at your life, it's sometimes unreliable. Sometimes unsatisfactory. But I think what's even more interesting is the root words of the word dukkha, the two pieces. Du means bad or difficult, and ka means empty. And it's often the empty wheel of an axle, the empty hole in a wheel where the axle goes. So you're putting those two together, it's a bad fit. And a bad fit makes for a bumpy ride. Oh, life is sometimes like that. It's a little bit bumpy. It's difficult. So he said, life is bumpy. He said, the reason it is bumpy is that we want what we don't have. We don't want what we don't want. We want to keep what we have that's pleasant. We want to keep away what we don't have that's unpleasant. So we're kind of in a tussle all the time. And he said that when we stop tussling, when we stop fighting and pushing and pulling and holding, there's a certain release that happens. As if we were opening our hands and allowing our experience to pass through them rather than grabbing and punching and pulling. So when we let go of tussling with our experience, we find some ease and freedom. And so he said, there is a problem, life's bumpy. There's a reason why it's bumpy. It's us holding on so tight. said the cure for this is letting go and opening our hands up rather than tussling so much. And he actually said there's also a path of practice that enables us to let go and to find a smoother ride in our lives. And the path begins with mindfulness. Why? Why does it begin with mindfulness? If we don't know what is happening in our lives, we have no choices. When we know what's happening, we have an opportunity for responsive choices in our lives. That's why it's said in this tradition that a moment of mindfulness is better than 100 years of not paying attention. One moment of mindfulness is better than 100 years of not paying attention. Not paying attention, not being present, not being awake, it's like sleepwalking through our lives. Not there for any of it. But in one moment of mindfulness, we're actually here. Pretty valuable. That's what we're here cultivating. So we wake up to our bodies. We wake up to the breath. We inhabit our own bodies, our own breath, our own experience. We inhabit ourselves fully from moment to moment. In the perspective of this tradition, there's only 6 things happening at any given moment. Only 6 things. And I'll ask you to search your experience. The 5 senses, what's smelled, heard, tasted, touched, and seen. There's only 1 other thing. What happens in the mind? 6 things. Can anybody tell me if there's something that's happened in your experience that's other than those 6 things?
Pain.
I'm waiting for somebody. Anybody? Okay.
Pain.
Say?
Pain.
Pain. It's what is felt. It's felt. Sensation in the body.
What about perception?
Perception is in the mind. And the interesting thing about all 6 of these things, they start with the body. The 5 senses we know are body-oriented. But the mind itself is part of our body. It's this amazing organ, this threat assessment machine that helps us make our way through our lives. So the simplest place to start being mindful of the body is the breath. And we've emphasized that here, and Tim talked about that last night. When we're breathing, we know we're breathing. When we breathe in long, we know we're breathing in long. When we breathe out long, we know we're breathing out long. Breathe out short, breathe in short. We know it. It's a pretty simple place to start. So why? Well, our breath is right there with us all the time. It's this available opportunity, place to put our attention. We breathe 23,000 times a day. Let's just say 1/3 of that we're asleep. So maybe we're not as mindful. Although I believe you can be mindful while you're sleeping, I've been told. So roughly 15,000 breaths during the day when we have an opportunity to become mindful of ourselves, of our own body, of our own experience. As we start to get close to our breath, to really know it, we become intimate with ourselves. On a physiological level, coming to our breath, even for a few seconds, can engage our parasympathetic nervous system, the calming system in our body. Just even coming to the breath for a few breaths calms our body physiologically. You know, And the Buddha didn't necessarily know the internal systems of our body, but he had some sense. He seemed to have some forethought about how science and medicine would organize our understanding of our body. But what else does this do, coming to our breath? It takes us out of our wandering mind. The mind is sometimes so active, just going here and there and there and here, all over, spinning around sometimes. And we have this tether, this built-in tether, the breath. We can find that tether and connect ourselves right here, right now, to this body, to this moment. On a practical level, if we don't know we are breathing in short, and we don't know we're breathing in shallow, maybe in a moment of fear, the threat system in our bodies continues to signal threat. We may even hyperventilate and end up with a panic attack. But just simply knowing what the breath is doing, I'm breathing in short, I'm breathing in shallow, just that awareness. We lengthen and deepen the breath. We find some ease, even in the midst of the fear, just by coming to the simple breath. So after we establish our mindfulness of the breath, what does the first foundation suggest we do? And again, Tim talked about the organization of the four foundations of mindfulness. And the first one is the body. And so, breath is the first part of that section. And Tim read that for you last night. So the next part again, monks. And I want to make a note. Monks is often translated as bhikkhus, and bhikkhus is a word that not only referred to monks at that time, but also referred to people who were practicing meditation. So this is us. Again, monks, bhikkhus, those who are practicing meditation. When walking, he knows I am walking. When standing, she knows I am standing. When sitting, he knows I am sitting. And when lying down, she knows, I am lying down. Or one knows accordingly, however his body is disposed. That's that section. When we're sitting, we know we're sitting. When we're standing, we know we're standing. When we're walking, we know we're walking. When we're lying down, we know we're lying down. So that's what we've been practicing. Awareness of ourselves as we sit. Awareness, mindfulness of our body as it walks. Lying down in body scan or other practice. It's pretty straightforward. It's kind of amazing. That's not that difficult. But right now, bring your awareness to you sitting. Did that take any energy? Did it take any effort? Anybody? Doesn't take any effort. Awareness is here already. You just turn it toward this body. As I said last night, a teacher named Munindra, and for my money, it's the very best meditation master name in all of history. Munindra. It's magical. But Munindra, one of the things that he used to say was mentioned, it's very simple, but it is not easy. Simple, but it's not easy. We have to remember, and mindfulness, as I've said, has other meanings, and those are remembering that there is a body, returning to this body, our home, observing this body, just this body, sitting and standing and lying down and walking. Simple. It's not easy. How do we end up just kind of throwing our limbs around, you know, walking around, and the head is like over here? We were like that a lot of times. So just as we're practicing here, learning ways for our awareness to come into this moment, and try to create the container here for us to make it a little bit more easy. We remove our distractions, we have this really safe and delightful container here at the campground. So we've drawn ourselves into relative seclusion, given ourselves really amazing conditions, and so we practice. So our awareness that there is a body deepens as we sit, as we walk, as we lie down, as we go here, as we go there, as we move between practices. Our awareness of our body deepens. Each time we turn our mindfulness toward the body, we're planting seeds for additional moments of mindfulness. It's said that one moment of mindfulness conditions another moment of mindfulness. If we're mindful in this moment, the likelihood that the next moment will be mindful is greater than if we're mindless in this moment. A moment of mindlessness, a moment of automatic pilot conditions another moment of automatic pilot. Each moment that we become mindful, we bring our attention into the body, however it is disposed, we're planting seeds for future moments of mindfulness. We're becoming intimate with our own body in a way that maybe we have not before. And it's pretty profound in its simplicity. When walking, know you're walking. When sitting, know you're sitting. When lying down, know you're lying down. So practically, how can we work with this? When sitting, if I know that my posture is sort of over rigid and too tight, then I have opportunity to relax and find some ease with an easeful, awake yet relaxed posture. If I'm slumping, if I'm in my sitting meditation and I'm slumping, if I don't know that I'm slumping and collapsing inward, then not only does the body collapse, but that makes our attention, our mindfulness, our whole experience kind of collapses inward. So when I know that I'm sitting, I also know how I am sitting. When I'm walking, I also know how I am walking. When I'm walking, if I don't know that I'm kind of rushing, kind of anxiety and kind of restlessness as I walk, then I get tight, doesn't feel good. But if I know I'm walking, and I know how I'm walking, I get to release, I get to slow down, I get to come back into this foot and this foot and this foot. Every time we come back, again, planting seeds for more moments of mindfulness. So, the next section. Again, monks, bhikkhus, those who are practicing meditation, you, when going forward and returning, he acts clearly knowing. And going forward and returning, pretty much just walking over there and coming back. He acts clearly knowing. And we could say that clearly knowing is mindful, but clearly knowing in this context, it's being fully aware. It's comprehending clearly, knowing fully what we're doing. So these are qualities of mindfulness as mindfulness deepens. This full awareness, this clear comprehension. And this sort of, just underneath the full awareness and the clear comprehension, there is the investigation and wisdom factors that are associated with mindfulness. When going forward and returning, she acts clearly knowing. When looking ahead and looking away, he acts clearly knowing. When flexing and extending her limbs, she acts clearly knowing. When wearing robes and carrying his outer robe and bowl, I don't know how many people are wearing robes here, but maybe in your robes. When you're wearing your robe and carrying your bowl, she acts clearly knowing. When eating, drinking, consuming food, which I was confused, eating and consuming food, that's a koan for you for tonight. When eating, drinking, consuming food, and tasting, she acts clearly knowing. When defecating and urinating, he acts clearly knowing. When walking, standing, sitting, falling asleep, waking up, talking, and keeping silent, she acts clearly knowing. I do a lot of those things. Mm-hmm. And that's our whole, I mean, that's a lot of our lives. You know, just the simple act of reaching for a door to turn the knob, extending her limbs, she acts clearly knowing. When walking this way and that, and we've all kind of experimented, I think, with mindfulness of eating. Eating, consuming food. Tasting, she acts clearly knowing. So when going to the bathroom, how many times do we go to the bathroom during the day? And really, it's another opportunity to come into the moment and be with the actual felt experience of using the toilet. I mean, as base as that may be, that's our lives. That's our human lives. We eat, we eliminate, we eat, we eliminate, we talk, we walk, we extend our arms. I feel like a little robot now.
I know.
This is pretty, I mean, that's the section in the Satipatthana Sutta, as translated by a German monk with a lot of scholarship. That is the section about activities of the body. That's pretty direct. I mean, it kind of strikes me. The direct path to realization, knowing the breath, knowing when you're walking, knowing that you're extending your arms, knowing when you're eating, when you're talking. And here we're silent. We have this opportunity for noble silence, which gives us a chance to fall into our own experience of our breath and our body. But talking is a big part of our lives. The amazing thing is that there's an opportunity to not only practice and deepen here, but as you hear this, taking your practice out into your lives. It was a big shift in my practice when I recognized that going to a retreat wasn't going to practice as much as it was to deepen practice. The whole thing shifted when I thought of my life as practice and retreat as a way to deepen and strengthen and see more clearly. In this tradition, as our mindfulness grows, we start to develop what's called continuity. And the continuity of mindfulness, the continuity of awareness, is what helps us develop concentration. As we develop concentration, a little bit like a microscope, so we're mindful, our mindfulness in continuity, many moments of mindfulness, starts to be a stream of mindfulness, and that actually sharpens sort of a lens for us to look closely at the nature of our own bodies and minds. So it begins with one moment of mindfulness, then another, and then there's continuity of awareness that allows us to see more clearly. So, if I can be mindful of these activities, I am less likely to err in unskillful ways. It's a little bit like a conveyor belt, a quality control technician. It's like all of our experience is streaming by on this conveyor belt. All of our thoughts, all of our sensations, all of our emotions. If I'm there doing my job, this is how a quality control person does their job. get ready. If I'm right there, I'm going to see thoughts of ill will, and I'm going to pull them out. If I see fear, I might take that out and stroke it, put it aside. If I see pain, I might pull that out and look at it. If I'm mindful, I'm seeing my experience as it goes by, and I can control the outcomes of my behavior, of my speech, of my actions. Again, it starts with mindfulness. As I said, one moment of mindfulness conditions subsequent moments of mindfulness, of paying attention. We come close to the breath one moment at a time. We come close to the body one moment at a time. We get closer, ever closer to the felt experience of our body one moment at a time. And this is how we are planting seeds. Each moment of mindfulness is like planting a seed. The more moments of mindfulness we have, the more seeds we plant. And what do these seeds grow into? Well, when they sprout, there are remarkable insights. There's wisdom and understanding that can grow from these seeds. Remarkable levels of self-understanding, of other understanding, of understanding our world, understanding what it means to be human. What it means to be human in relationship. And it can give us a closer and closer sense of really the ultimate nature of reality. And I can say that my own understanding is that when we become more mindful, when we see more deeply into the nature of our experience, again, starting with the body, there is a remarkable world of connection, compassion, wisdom. I mean, remarkable, like blow your mind, remarkable. All starts with a moment of mindfulness, one breath at a time. The body, sitting, standing, walking, one moment at a time. It doesn't take any energy. It's simple, but it's not easy. So we plant seeds of awareness one moment at a time. I'm going to read just a little bit. And again, this is it's a book about Munindra. I like saying his name. And Munindra was a pretty remarkable scholar and practitioner. And he, in the 50s, the 40s and 50s, he determined that he really wanted to explore this tradition deeply. And so he went to Burma, which last night Tim was talking about. In about 200 AD, Buddhism was pretty much wiped out of India. And it was taken to some other countries at that time. And it was completely wiped out. Like, Buddhism was gone in India, where it was born. And one of the places it went to was Sri Lanka. And a few of the other places that it went were Burma and Thailand. So some of the roots of the tradition that really puts the Satipatthana Sutta, the four foundations of mindfulness, right in front of us today, are from those traditions, particularly Burma and Thailand. At least that's my understanding. And so Munindra, he went to Burma and he actually studied and practiced for 8 years. And he read like all the texts that were available. And he practiced, it said he practiced over 40 kinds of insight meditation. So 40 different methods within this tradition. So he was like, I want to know. And he took a look, spent some time. And so Munindra ended up in India. And there he met Joseph Goldstein, Sharon Salzberg, Jack Kornfeld, Richie Davidson, who's doing research at University of Wisconsin, Jack Engler, who's a psychiatrist at Harvard. So Munindra's teachings and what he brought to us, again, is one of the reasons why this is in front of us right now. So one of the things about Munindra, it was just simple. Everything in meditation, everything is meditation in this practice. Even while eating, drinking, dressing, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking. Whatever you are doing, everything should be done mindfully, dynamically, with totality, completeness, thoroughness. Then it becomes meditation, meaningful, purposeful. It is not thinking, but experiencing from moment to moment, living from moment to moment, without clinging, without condemning, without judging, without evaluating, without comparing, without selecting, without criticizing. Choiceless awareness. Meditation is not only sitting, it is a way of living. It should be integrated with our whole life. It is actually an education in how to see, how to hear, how to smell, how to eat, how to drink, how to walk with full awareness. To develop mindfulness is the most important factor in the process of awakening. Wow. Okay. Let's get mindful. Oh, where are we on?
Please. I'm okay. Looking forward to this moment.
Okay. This is Frog and Toad in the Garden. Frog was in his garden. Toad came by. "What a fine garden you have, Frog," he said. "Yes," said Frog, "it is very nice, but it was hard work." "I wish I had a garden," said Toad. "Here are some flower seeds. Plant them in the ground," said Frog, "and soon you will have a garden." "How soon?" asked Toad. "Quite soon," said Frog. Toad ran home. He planted the flower seeds. "Now, seeds," said said Toad, start growing. Toad walked up and down a few times. The seeds did not start to grow. Toad put his head close to the ground and said loudly, now seeds start growing. Toad looked at the ground again. The seeds did not start to grow. Toad put his head very close to the ground and shouted, now seeds start growing. Frog came running up the path. What is all this noise? He asked. My seeds will not grow, said Toad. You are shouting too much, said Frog. These poor seeds are afraid to grow. My seeds are afraid to grow? Asked Toad. Of course, said Frog. Leave them alone for a few days. Let the sun shine on them. Let the rain fall on them. Soon your seeds will start to grow. That night, Toad looked out his window. Drat, said Toad. My seeds have not started to grow. They must be afraid of the dark. Toad went out into his garden with some candles. I will read the seeds a story, said Toad. Then they will not be afraid. Toad read a long story to his seeds. All the next day, Toad sang songs to his seeds. And all the next day, Toad read poems to his seeds. And all the next day, Toad played music for his seeds. Toad looked at the ground. The seeds still did not start to grow. What shall I do? Cried Toad. They must be the most frightened seeds in all the world. Then Toad felt very tired, and he fell asleep. Toad, Toad, wake up, said Frog. Look at your garden. Toad looked at his garden. Little green plants were coming up out of the ground. At last, shouted Toad, my seeds have stopped being afraid to grow. And now you will have a nice garden too, said Frog. Yes, said Toad. But you were right, Frog. It was very hard work. So we'll continue planting seeds. I want to thank you all very much. It's my first opportunity to offer the Dharma in a talk. Thank you very much.
Thank you.